Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Oliver White, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Bahamas bonefish. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Oliver a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next show is. The broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Oliver White about Bahamas bonefish. Looking for that shot at permit? Whipray Key Fishing Lodge in Belize is where you want to be. When you stay at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge, you're on a private island and are only minutes away from some of the finest permit fishing in Belize. Whipray Key is just a 30-minute boat ride from Placentia. Once you're there, you'll be fishing Permit Alley, one of Belize's best fisheries, and you won't be taking long boat rides to get started. You'll fish with world-class guides like Daniel Cabral, whose family has fished the area for over 30 years. Want to switch it up and fish for tarpon and bonefish and make it a grand slam? They can make it happen at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge. Book your next adventure now. Visit WhiprayKeyFishingLodge.com. That's Whipray, C-A-Y-E, FishingLodge.com. Before we introduce Oliver, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Oliver's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. You can visit them at frontrangeanglers.com. And to get this gift certificate, you can redeem it in their store or online or in their online store. So now here's how you can win. You've got to be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the questions or questions, depending on how I end up, will be about something that Oliver and I talk about during the show. So just submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage, and maybe you'll win that $25 gift certificate. Our guest tonight is Oliver White. Oliver fell in love with fishing early on in his life. Since then, he's let fishing guide him through life, fishing the four corners of the world and enjoying every minute of it. His primary job is running two lodges in the Bahamas. Abaco Lodge is dear to him as he built it from scratch in 2008, and it quickly rose in the ranks and is regarded as one of the premier bone fishing lodges in the world. Bear's Lodge is a longtime stalwart in the bone fishing world. The fabled flats of South Andros Island have beckoned anglers for a long time and called to him for his first saltwater trip. It has been close to him ever since, and he became a partner in 2008. Oliver is also a partner in Indie Fly, along with Al Perkinson, which was formed in 2014. Their mission is to help create sustainable livelihoods for indigenous communities by teaching them how to use fly fishing as a form of income. The result is low-impact tourism that drives dollars and creates meaningful and permanent conservation efforts. Far and away, this is his favorite thing to work on. It all started with a small village named Riwad, deep in the interior of Guyana. They are also working on projects in French Polynesia and in Wyoming with a few other prospects. Well, Oliver, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Glad to have you. It's hard to track you down with you traveling all over the world all the time.
Yeah, I've been home for a couple weeks now, and I just did a tally. I've been in 16 countries this year, so it's been a pretty busy year.
Oh, wow. So where'd you come from last?
My last trip was in Bhutan. So I was over in Bhutan last month doing a little exploring, looking for Golden Maseer in the southern part of Bhutan close to the India border.
Wow, wow. Yeah, I hear that's a really beautiful part of the world too, huh?
No, just stunning. You know, everything from the Himalayas all the way down to the tropical jungle with wild elephants and, you know,
yeah.
Extremely remote. Not many people have been. Very challenging logistically to get there. The fishing itself was also very challenging and very rewarding. You know, the fish are very powerful, you know, very elusive and, you know, kind of a good combination of all the things that make great fishing, which a lot of that are real difficulties to overcome.
Yeah, you probably know Jeff Currier. We did a show on the Maseer a few years ago, but yeah, I think that was the show where he said he was sure there was a tiger lurking in the jungle while he was fishing or something like that. So, yeah, quite the adventure over there. But, well, good. Well, let's dive in. Let's talk. We're talking about the Bahamas, which is near and dear to your heart and your playground. So just to orient people, we do have people listening from all over the world. So tell us a bit, you know, where the Bahamas are in the world and what's the best way to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of easiest orientation are the Bahamas are just off the east coast of Florida. You know, one of the things that makes them incredibly unique, it's an archipelago of more than 700 islands. You know, just under 30 of those are inhabited. And it's one of the few island chains in the world that are non-volcanic. So you have this incredible flat ecosystem, right? You know, the flats that we as anglers look for that are kind of more substantial than really anywhere in the world. And that's really what makes it so appealing as an angler is just this incredible volume of habitat. And also for anyone on the East Coast in particular, but Americans in general, it's remarkably easy to get there. And almost always, you know, the outer islands of the Bahamas, you know, is a term that's thrown around often for those that don't know. The Bahamas is a country of about 400,000 people, but 320,000 of those live in Nassau, which is the capital. And so that island is actually called New Providence, and it's in kind of the center of the Bahamas, and it's one of the smaller islands, but it has almost all of the people. And then the remaining population is spread out amongst all these islands. And so, you know, for many years, I lived on Abaco Island, which is the northernmost island in the Bahamas. Marsh Harbor is the main town there. It's considered the third largest city in the Bahamas, but we have one stoplight there, right? So it's still a very small place to be the third biggest city in a country. And so usually to get to the Bahamas, it's very easy to get to Nassau from really anywhere in the world. There's a direct flight from London, throughout Canada, throughout the United States, and Nassau works as a hub for all of the Bahamas. And you can get out to all the outer islands of the Bahamas, which is really everything outside of the capital. And some of the more developed islands, like Grand Bahama, Freeport area, Abaco, have direct flights throughout many of the South Florida cities, Miami, Lauderdale, Orlando, West Palm. We just got a direct flight from Atlanta on Delta to Abaco, which is great for us. And
wow.
There's also an incredible resource of small airlines in the Lauderdale, West Palm Beach area in particular that, you know, do these little tiny charters of, you know, 6,
right.
8, 10, 12 people to all these various islands and often go direct. So South Andros, where Bears Lodge is, you know, that's an island with about 900 people, but it's an international airport with customs. So you can fly directly from Florida, and there's a little tiny airline called Watermakers, which flies a 9-seater 5 days a week directly over there, mainly for anglers.
Wow, wow. So very accessible, very accessible. Yeah, like just get to southern Florida or, you know, where, like you say, a lot of direct flights, too, from all places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, I would really go so far as to say as you will not find better bone fishing anywhere in the world that's as easy to get to as the Bahamas, right? I mean, I've done a ton of fishing, and the Indian Ocean is spectacular, but it's a journey. And I live in North Carolina, and I can pull out of my driveway at 7 a.m., and I can be at Abaco lodge by 1 o'clock and on the boat fishing. And that's a pretty remarkable thing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it takes, from the States, it takes a couple of days to get to, Indian Ocean, doesn't it?
no doubt about that.
Yeah. 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 Quite the journey. Well, you said they're non-volcanic. That caught my interest. So are they very flat in general then?
Yeah, extremely, right? There's very little elevation change throughout the country. It also means that at one point, the entire island chain was underwater, and you know, at another point, there was a lot more land showing than there is today. But what that really, really entails is when you kind of step foot into these flats, in many places, you can walk for miles and miles and miles and miles, and you don't have this gradual decline into deeper water. You just have this consistent, beautiful flat, which is just perfect bonefish habitat.
Now, what can you describe some of the individual islands? And Ben Jaggs in Livingston, Montana, he said, can you tell us the differences between the islands and how they, you know, how they fish differently?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, Ben. I mean, the Bahamas, incredible space, right? When you take Bimini, which is basically 30 miles from Florida, and then you can get all the way to the southern Bahamas where you're a couple hundred miles away, they're very different places. And a lot of the islands do fish differently, and a lot of them have things that make them unique. So, for example, the northern Bahamas, which is really Grand Bahama and Abaco, they have some of the more diverse fisheries in the Bahamas where both of those islands are catching a lot of permit, a lot of tarpon, relative, of course, for the Bahamas, and still have an incredible bonefish population. Somewhere like Andros, which is really the bonefish capital of the Bahamas and arguably the world, it is very bonefish-centric. You know, we do still catch a few of the other species there, but much less density. Certain islands have a great reputation for bigger fish. Grand Bahama would be one of those. The Berry Islands, Bimini, you know, those are a few islands that really have some monster bonefish. The west side of Andros would be another one. Abaco is a very diverse island, and it's the one I probably know the best because I've lived there. And you have the Marls, which is where my lodge is there. And that is kind of one giant nursery almost. You know, the island is shaped like a backward C, and that C, you know, that inside of that C is one giant bonefish flat, you know, full of mangroves and full of, you know, just food, and you have a great density of bonefish, but you don't have a proportionate bell curve of size distribution. So we have a whole lot of fish, 2 to 6 pounds. Don't see a lot of really tiny ones, and don't see a ton of really big ones given the numbers of fish. As you get out to the southern Bahamas, you know, you start moving a little further south, the water gets warmer, the populations of the islands go down, you have some incredible fishing down near Crooked and Acklands, also with some good diversity, and one of the things that makes that particularly special for me is there's great blue water fishing right there, where you could, you know, be waiting a bonefish flat, catching bonefish, go out in the afternoon and catch a blue marlin all within half a mile of each other.
Wow.
And I don't know many places in the world where that type of stuff exists.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to jump in and cover it all. I mean, such.
Well, no, that's a good overview. And now when you're fishing down there, so, you know, I'm out on Google right now just kind of following you around and talking about the different islands and areas. It looks like it just covers too much territory to basically run from one major area to another, right? So once you're there, you're kind of fishing a particular, like Abaco, you'll stay in that area around Abaco while you're fishing, you know,
yeah,
if you're
absolutely.
There for days or a week or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly if you want to go from island to island, you're going to do that by plane or really large boat with very rare exceptions. Like, you know, if you're in the Berry Islands, you could run – you know, the Berry Islands are kind of between Nassau and Andros, and you could kind of run from the southern Berries through the Jolters, you know, which is between Andros and the Berries, and get all the way to Andros and fish that effectively. The northern end of Abaco and Grand Bahama almost touch, you know, so that there's some overlap there. But in general, you would very much be island bound. You would kind of pick a destination and stay. And in most cases, you wouldn't even be able to explore that whole island thoroughly in a week of fishing. On almost every single island is too expansive to cover in a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's too long of boat rides in between. You just be riding in boats rather than fishing, right? So, okay, good. That gives a pretty good perspective on things. Which islands do you think are fished most often?
You know, undoubtedly Andros is the one that is the most famous, and you know, if you take the course of history, more visiting anglers have been there than any of the other islands. I mean, it was kind of where bone fishing really got started. I mean, people have been fly fishing there since the 60s pretty readily, and there are a ton of lodges and places to go in Andros. So I would say that that's still getting the majority of people. Grand Bahama and Abaco are probably close seconds. And then it's probably a pretty big drop until you get to some of the other islands, like, you know, the Exumas and Crooked and Acklands again, Eleuthera, you know, some of these other places that are not quite yet as well established. And then you still have some really kind of off the grid, kind of remote things that very few people have seen, like Inagua, Managua, Ragged Island. I mean, those places are still kind of off the beaten path for even well-traveled anglers.
And are those offer anything more than you'd find elsewhere? I mean, is it like fishing Kamchatka or something, you know, where you're really off
the grid? It's not quite like that. You know, one of the things that often limits the travel is the lack of infrastructure. So, you know, Managua and Inagua, there's only a flight once a week. So, you know, you're only going to be able to get in and out once a week. Very limited options to stay or for restaurants and guiding, you know, to be guided or any of that. Both of those do have some really great fishing and some large fish that are relatively unpressured and they do eat flies well. But you've got to be a pretty resourceful angler, you know, to do that well. You need to be able to go out there and feel really confident in your own abilities of not only fishing, but reading water, reading tides, and trying to figure out where you want to be at the right time, at the right place to make it all happen.
Yeah, pretty much on your own down there, more or less, huh?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
And a lot of there's a lot of great DIY fishing in the Bahamas, and there's a lot of information out there to help you. And so you can go to an island cold and have good information of good places to be and what tides you're looking for. And you might be imperfect, but you could be close enough and kind of stumble your way through as a decent angler without even being a great angler. But when you start going somewhere where you really get no information at all, and you do have, you know, tidal movement and wind and all these other variables and try to figure it out from scratch, it's a little more challenging than I think a lot of people realize.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's even when you're fishing with a guide, you know, you're racing around to find a flat that's coming up or whatever. And you know, if you're not there every day, you don't know those things. So then you spend a lot of time trying to figure it all out rather than fishing, right? So
that's right. I mean, ultimately, that's the value of a guide. You know, you're getting to ride on their shoulders for their time invested in learning and figuring it out.
Definitely. We had Jerry in Houston, Texas. He asked specifically about Abaco. Any specific advice for fishing Abaco? That's your home turf, right?
Yeah, sure. I'll kind of break Abaco into a couple segments. So the Marls, you know, which is the wheelhouse for my business there, you know, those are very cooperative fish, right? They are very angler-friendly. There are a lot of them. The best advice I can give you there is you need a guide. It's an impossible place to try to figure out and migrate on your own. It's this incredible labyrinth. It's all boat fishing. The bottom's very soft, very difficult wading. The other thing for fly selection there is counter to most places in the Bahamas, we fish a lot smaller flies. I'd rather fish a 6 or maybe a 4, where in somewhere like Andros, a 2 or 4 is much more common. And I tend to keep my flies very natural, almost always tan, a little bit of rubber legs, maybe a little bit of orange, you know, for a spawning sac indicator, but very little flash and relatively light.
Now, you said, To interrupt you, just so I get oriented here, you said Marls. Can you spell that?
Sure. So the Marls, M-A-R-L-S. So okay. The Marls is a part of Abaco, and it's actually a national park. And so when you look at Abaco on an island, it is really shaped like a backward C. And so that southwestern side, the inside of that C, is the Marls. And that just was recently named a national park. And really what it is one giant bonefish flat. So my lodge is sitting dead center.
Is that north of Wood Key?
So if you're there's two Wood Keys, so that's hard to say.
Oh.
So when you look at Abaco, if you look at Marsh Harbor, the town, it's
right
on the eastern point. So come to the west side of the island and see how the island is just shaped like a backward C.
Right, and there's all those little keys
right
in the, yeah.
All that is just, it's one giant flat, right? The average depth is knee-deep,
okay,
that whole thing.
So it's
one huge bonefish flat, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's if I leave the dock of the lodge, it takes me 45 minutes straight out to get to the end. It's 21 miles, right? And I can run 40 minutes north, and I can run 40 minutes south, right? And just hit the boundaries.
Hmm. Wow. Cool.
So.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to figure out where
fishing,
you.
But that bottom in there is very sure. Yeah. So that bottom in there is very soft. So you're going to do all the fishing there from the boat. And as a result, I don't really want heavy flies because I don't want my flies to get all the way down in that stuff. So I'm fishing mainly bead chain, size 6, tan. And now if you switch to the ocean side of the island, right, which moves you over to the Atlantic, which is also the windward side, our prevailing wind in the Bahamas comes out of the northeast. Now you have a very big tidal movement, right, and you're fishing traditional ocean beaches. And those fish are very large. The world record bonefish actually came out of Abaco, and it held for many years at over 17 pounds. Not on fly, and that was out in Green Turtle Key, which is one of these oceanside flats. But we see a lot of really big fish over there, very tidal dependent. And so I find very small windows where the fishing is really good. And I've always had the best luck on the oceanside there with the last couple hours of the falling tide and then the incoming push. And the other bit of advice I'd give people for fishing those fish is they're very finicky, right? You have everything from Snake Key to Bite of Robinson to Cherokee Sound and then all the little keys, Green Turtle, you know, Man of War Guana. There's little flats all through there. But those fish act as if they're heavily pressured, even though I don't think that's necessarily the case. I've had a lot more success over there throwing crabs, bigger meals, or very sparse and very natural bonefish flies, and I tend to move my flies much less there. So, for example, if I saw a fish coming down the shoreline, big fish, I would lead him 15 feet, strip till I got tight, bump the fly just a little bit, and then I would just let it sit. And then as the fish came by, maybe a little twitch, a little bit of movement, versus the traditional strip in the Bahamas, which is a long, slow, kind of constant movement, and you can often entice fish by speeding up the strip. That has not been a recipe for success for me on the ocean side there. So I'm fishing a very different technique for those fish.
That's interesting, you know, the same species, just different sides of an island and how they react so much differently because of where they live, huh? So that's interesting, yeah. Very cool. We need to take a quick break here, Oliver. And when we come back, we can dive back in. And if you want to talk more about Abaco, we can then. So give me just a minute. We'll be right back. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the great highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak Rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick boats, I'm convinced that Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at their ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. That's BigSkyInflatables.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Oliver White about Bahamas bonefish. If you'd like to ask Oliver a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Oliver, I always ask my guests at this point, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So tell us a little bit about your two lodges and your latest adventures here.
Sure, absolutely. You know, so I'm one of the lucky ones that makes a living fishing, and the primary thing I do is run these two lodges in the Bahamas. So I have Abaco Lodge on Abaco, and I have Bears Lodge in South Andros. Both of those now are kind of very established and really have been great for me, and they've been great for the local communities and great for the Bahamas. And they're both really quality operations with two distinct fisheries. And so if anyone's interested in getting down to the Bahamas and checking it out, you know, we'll point you in the right direction. And if it's not with us, we'll certainly refer you to people that we think would do a better job than we would. You know, I'm also a writer. I have a column in Fly Fisherman where I kind of write a little bit about the other things I do, which, you know, my favorite thing is to kind of travel around and explore. You know, as I mentioned, getting on this show, you know, I've had a really busy year of travel, and coming up, I'm getting ready to head to Argentina in a couple weeks, and then I'm going to go to Oman and Lesotho and Sudan, you know, and those are all just in the next couple months. And so, you know, I tend to get around the world, and, I'm often taking people with me. So if you're ever looking for a crazy adventure and, you know, want somebody to help show you around, I do a lot of that as well. And certainly more than willing to help. You know, I love getting people excited about fishing and getting out there and helping, doing a little bit of good all at the same time.
Sounds cool. Yeah, yeah. And what about your other endeavor that we talked about in your bio?
So Indie Fly is a 501c3 that Al Perkinson, who's now at Sims, and I co-founded a few years ago. IndieFly's mission is really to help indigenous communities all over the world. And the goal there is that we believe that you can empower local communities to own their own fishing businesses. And if they're benefiting economically, then they will naturally become conservationists. And so we did this program down in Guyana where we taught a community how to run and build and be a fishing lodge. And as a result, you know, we protected 200 square miles of rainforest, and this whole community is able to make a living by taking people fly fishing and catch and release. And it's been a remarkable success. And so, you know, we are working actively to kind of spread that footprint around the world. We have a couple seed projects going now and looking for some other ones and, you know, trying to raise a little money to do so. And it is a full tax deductible donation. If anybody's looking for an end of the year place to kick some funds, it's indiefly.org. And we certainly would appreciate it, and we'll put it to good use.
You kind of went underwater when you said that the URL. Can you give that to us again?
Oh, sure. So the URL again is indiefly.org.
Indiefly.org. Okay, great. Terrific. Well, that sounds great, and certainly will make the planet a better place as you expand that effort, I'm sure. Yeah, so. Well, back to thanks for sharing with us, and back to Abaco. Any other helpful tips you can give to folks about fishing that area? Suggestions?
Yeah, you know, Abaco is a great island to go and do it on your own, and it's also great. Great island, go and fish with a lodge or guide. So there's several great lodges where you can do a full all-inclusive stay like I offer, and I have competitors that also run great programs. There's also independent guides. So, you know, you could just hire a guide for a day. And there's also just great fishing to do on your own. And you can do a combo of all of those things as well. And it's also a great island, because
there's other things to do. So you could go with your family and, you know, you could escape and fish for a little while and go play golf and do some beaching and other things as well. So there's a lot of reasons to consider it. And the big thing, I think, is just don't get frustrated, right? If you hit one spot and don't find any fish, that doesn't mean the spot's as bad as it could mean that you're just there at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you said a lot of do-it-yourself, and Ben Jags in Livingston, Montana asked about that. He says, do you have any recommendations for putting together a do-it-yourself wade the flats trip combined with a couple days of guided butt boat fishing? So that sounds like Abaco right there. Where
yeah, that's definitely.
Go ahead.
No, that's Abaco's definitely the wheelhouse, I think, for that. Eleuthera is another good option. Long Island as well. You know, both of those are places with flats that are accessible by the road so that you can get out there and do it on your own without needing a boat. And all those islands also have some good guides so that you could, you know, get some guide advice and do that as well. And then a lot of islands are not conducive to it at all. Andros is a good example. You know, Andros has some of the most extensive flats in the Bahamas, but it's almost impossible to do it yourself. You know, all the development on Andros is on the east side of the island. You know, like all the islands, that's the ocean side, the windward side. Almost all the fishing is on the west or in the creeks that run through the island or on the southern tips, and there's a few little pockets of flats on the east coast. You know, but you're much more limited there, and so it's not a great place to go try to do a DIY trip.
Now, when you're talking about Abaco, you mentioned that the marls is you know, too soft to be wading. So where would the do-it-yourself fly fisher go and wade? Would it be on the ocean side then, windward side?
Yes, sir. So you're looking primarily on the ocean side flats. There's a great area called Snake Key, you know, which is very accessible with some great wading. And then there's a surprising number of just small little pockets of flats on the ocean side, you know, just up and down all shore. I talk to people all the time on the island who are renting a home somewhere, and they're just like, you know, I have this little tiny flat right in front of the house, and I'm seeing bonefish there. And it's like that up and down the island, and most of those are just neglected, right? They're not big enough to justify a guide running down there to try to put pressure on it. So, you know, a lot of these guys who are renting homes on the ocean side are fishing just right in front of where they are. And then there's another spot called Cherokee Sound, which is really accessible wade fishing that that a lot of DIY anglers also go.
Okay, good. Ben Jags also asked, what island would you recommend for two hardcore fly fishers versus those times when I would bring my family?
Mutually exclusive, Ben. You know, there are certain places that are more family friendly, and there's things that are a little bit more rustic and a little bit more hardcore. I would say that as a hardcore angler, you know, some of the more remote and kind of less family focused places. I mean, a lot of Andros could be that, where, you know, it's great for the hardcore angler. You know, it's what I really consider the real Bahamas. I mean, you go and it's standing still in time. The people are genuine and fun. It's a really great guy's trip. You know, some of the other islands that I mentioned earlier that no one really goes, Managua, you know, those would be great adventures for, you know, really hardcore guys who want to go out there and tough it out and not somewhere you want to bring a family. But somewhere like Grand Bahama or Abaco, you know, from an angling perspective, you could be a hardcore angler and go and have a great time. But at the same time, those are islands that are established, and there's a lot of great operations where you could go and take your families, and they can have a great time too.
Okay, good. Let's see here. Which area produces the largest fish, do you think, bonefish?
Yeah, you know, there's several of the world records for bonefish are still held in the Bahamas. You know, Bimini, Barry's, Andros, you know, all of those places have historically produced just monster bonefish. Abaco has in the past as well. And if you were telling me, or if you gave me an opportunity myself as an angler to go catch, you know, a
my biggest bonefish is 11 pounds, so let's call it 12 pounds or bigger. I would say Grand Bahama would be my first choice. I mean, there are just a lot of really big fish there. And if I was particularly just trophy hunting, that would be the one on my spot.
And how do they compare in size to the Keys bonefish, Florida Keys?
No, in general, the Keys are going to be a much bigger average, without a doubt. A much lower quantity. It's quite an accomplishment. Although it's been getting better in the Keys here lately, but in general, the bonefish in Keys has been in a pretty precipitous decline. So, you know, catching them at all has been quite a feat. But the fish there are still very big and always special.
And how did the Bahamas fare in the last hurricane? Did you guys come out okay? Oliver?
You know, again, the Bahamas is such a big place. Parts of it were totally Hello?
Yeah, you're kind of breaking up. Go ahead and give it a try again.
Sure. I've got you loud and clear on my side, but...
Coming in and out, so go ahead.
The Bahamas is a really big place. So, you know, this last hurricane and pretty much every hurricane, parts of the Bahamas tends to get really pounded, and a lot of it is completely unscathed. So, a couple of these islands were like Ragged Island, parts of Long Island, parts of Crooked Island were really, really destroyed in these hurricanes. And then, you know, Abaco, Andros, these places where I am, we dodged a bullet this year.
Great, great, good. So the main areas of fishing are still, it sounds like, very intact and in good shape. That's good.
And ultimately, hurricanes do a lot to improve the resource, too, right? I mean, there's a lot of damage to the infrastructure, but hurricanes also do a lot of purging, and there obviously is some destruction, but from a fishery standpoint, there's often a lot of good that comes from them as well.
Roy Fukushima in Orange, California asked about when the best months to fish for bonefish in the Bahamas.
Yeah, you know, that's probably the question I answer the most anymore, is like, when's the best time to come? And it's really hard. I can tell you when the highest demand is, but that's usually irrespective of when the best fishing is. So I'm going to kind of go on a little tangent here. But one thing to keep in mind is our bonefish don't migrate, right?
Okay.
Man, these aren't steelhead. They aren't salmon, right? They aren't only there part of the year. They live there. They're always there. So you can catch bonefish year-round in the Bahamas. And really what impacts the quality of your fishing is going to be the weather. And now certain times of year, there's more weather risk, implicit weather risk, than others. And an example of that would be right now. So we are in the time of year in the Bahamas, especially in the northern Bahamas like Abaco, where we are starting to get cold fronts. And when we have cold fronts, the fishing's really tough. I mean, we'll have a couple of days where we might not catch anything, might not even be able to get out. But on the backside of those, the fishing is spectacular. And that's really... It creates an interesting challenge. So if you're trying to book your trip 6 or 12 months in advance, like most people, you're rolling the dice because you're really at the mercy of the weather. But generally speaking, every single year at both of my lodges, our biggest fish of the year will be caught in January or February, which most people consider the worst time to come. And they consider the worst time to come because they've gotten there and they've gotten burned with bad weather. And so there is a higher weather risk that time of year, but the fishing can be the best of the year at the same time. So high risk, high reward. The fall is also one of my favorite times of year, but you talk about October, November. I mean, it's some of our best fishing of the year, but it's also still hurricane season.
Right.
So it's almost binary. You know, if there's a hurricane, then obviously fishing's not going to be very good. And but if there's not, then fishing's really great. And then you have our spring, which is certainly our highest demand. I mean, March, April, May, I mean, most quality operations are full, and the islands get full. We see a lot of anglers, and you know, that can be really great fishing. But really what it is if you're going to book a trip well in advance, it's your safest weather risk. And so, you know, that is what creates a lot of the demand. I think combined with you're kind of coming out of a winter and people are ready to go. So I think a few things help create that demand, but I don't think it's the best fishing necessarily that drives that. The summer fishing is something that I've really enjoyed in the Bahamas, mainly just because when I was living there, it's when we tended to slow down for the lodge and demand was at an all-time low. It would be June, July, August, September, you know, the middle of trout season. And I think part of it is really in the United States, once it gets warm, people don't have a desire to go to the tropics and bonefish kind of fall off the radar. But as that water warms up, our permit fishing gets really good. And the bone fishing, they're still around. It certainly gets a little more challenging in the afternoons as the water heats up and the fish kind of retreat to deeper water. But early morning, late evenings, and being in the right place, we have great fishing that time of year as well. And one of the things I really love about that time of year is there's almost no wind, and you get these little afternoon squalls. And so it lets me go explore a lot of these little outer keys and places where you typically don't want to run a bone fishing skiff, you know, with chop and wind. But in the summertime, it's glass all the time. You can run all over. And so, you know, I find a lot of great fishing. I find mutton snapper up on the flats. And, you know, there's always something at whatever time of the year to make it intriguing. And I know that's not the answer he's looking for. When should I book my trip? But really, I think it's a real disservice to what's going on for that fishery to say that there is one really best time to be there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that kind of applies to anywhere, you know, in the Caribbean and south. I mean, you never know what the weather's going to be, right? But would you say a week-long trip is a pretty good bet on getting at least a couple of days of good fishing in, no matter what time of year it is?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, without a doubt. I mean, to get blown out for a week solid is almost unheard of. You know, a few tough days, and almost always whatever caused that tough fishing, the backside of that, those fish are hungry too, and the fishing is usually really good. So
yeah,
if you're going to
come
for a solid week, I would expect you would always get a couple good days.
Yeah, yeah. Ben Jags again. Ben had a lot of questions tonight. Are there any times of the year to totally avoid?
I don't think so, right? I really don't. You're going to be hard-pressed to find somebody open in kind of August, September to take you, but when I'm living on the island and I'm there, I'm fishing every day on my own and having a great time and feel like I have the whole place to myself.
Yeah, okay. Ben also asked, are there other species of fish you would recommend trying for while you're in the Bahamas? You just mentioned permit. How prevalent are they?
You know, I'm a believer that you should cast at everything that swims, right?
So when I noticed that from your pictures, Oliver.
I molest them all, right? So when I get in a flat boat, man, I have my bonefish rod, my permit rod, my tarpon rod, and I have another rod rigged with wire for cudas and you know, snapper, predaceous fish, anything that's going on like that. And really, man, I cast at all of them. Big barracuda are surprisingly challenging and a lot of fun on a fly. And, man, if people are not taking advantage of that, they're missing out. When you see a mutton snapper on a flat, you know, they pop up this big pink tail, and they tail just like bonefish and permit. They're incredibly smart, very challenging, great fighters and great table fare. We do have a healthy permit population and some juvenile tarpon. You'd certainly be amiss to not cast at one of those. But, yeah, I'm a big believer, you know, if there's something cruising, you should put a fly in front of his face and, you know, give him an opportunity to play with you.
So all those fish are available in and around the Bahamas?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, throughout the Bahamas.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, with varying populations, but throughout the Bahamas, you're going to find a mix of all of them.
Okay. Let's take another quick break, and then when we come back, we'll dig into more about bonefish tactics and strategies and so forth. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Baja Fly Fishing Company is dedicated to fulfilling your vacation dreams. And just so there's no mistake, they derive as much pleasure from helping a novice improve as they do fishing with a pro. From the casual to the hardcore, they can match your expectations with their experience and coaching. A vacation with Baja Fly Fishing is more than a fishing trip. It's a full-on Baja experience that you will remember forever. They know the Baja after 40 years of traveling, its back roads, kayaking, its shoreline, surfing and snorkeling while pioneering the fly fishing techniques that have evolved into the tactics used today. They are well-versed in fly fishing the beach, in kayaks, on pongas, and are well-versed in all tackle types. Join them in pursuit of roosterfish, dorado, marlin, sailfish, wahoo, jack crevalle, yellowfin, skipjack, and many other species. Learn more about Baja Fly Fishing Company by visiting their website at bajaflyfish.com. That's bajaflyfish.com. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Oliver White about the Bahamas bonefish. If you'd like to ask Oliver a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question, and we'll try to answer your question on the show tonight. Okay, one last question about lodging and so forth. Roy Fukushima in California want to know, can you give us a range of rates for including guide for a week stay down in the Bahamas? It's probably, you know, ranges depending on sure. the accommodations, of course. But
yeah, there's going to be a really big swing. I would imagine for a full week you could find stuff as low as $2,500 to $3,000 for a full week for lodging and guide, you know, to as much as probably $7,500 on the high side. And, you know, that's a pretty big swing, and there's going to be a pretty big swing in what that entails. And a lot of it are going to be creature comforts, but a lot of it is also going to be just quality of equipment, quality of guides, quality of safety equipment on the boat, insurance, you know, things like that that I think a lot of anglers don't really properly think about. You know, as an operator, where you know, all of my boats have an EPIRB, all of my boats have a satellite phone, you know, all of my guides have done not just a first aid course, but, you know, an advanced wilderness medicine course. You know, when I think about the cost of incorporating all that into my business, I don't know how some guys can charge on the low side of that, but it definitely exists.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say insurance.
Yeah.
I'm used to fishing down in Belize, and I don't know if anybody has any insurance down there, you know. It's like, geez, the last time we went on a cave tour down there, and I'm going, there's no way that this would ever happen in the United States, you know. And without signing releases and, you know, all kinds of waivers and stuff. And, you know, you don't sign anything. You just go. So, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of that. And, I also don't ever want people to be sticker shocked either. And, I am on the higher side of operations, but I'm certainly not the most expensive. But I also don't hide any fees, and there's no nickel and dime. When you show up and fish with me, bars open, we pick you up at the airport, you know, we have equipment for you, you know, there's no surprise bill at the end of the week, right? You know, it's all there up front. And so a lot of places look a little cheaper by the time you get home and realize what you ended up really spending, it's not quite as much of a deal as you thought it was.
Now, that brings up a question, because, you know, you go to different parts of the world, and you mentioned equipment, a lot of you know, different parts of the world, some outfitters will provide equipment, and you don't worry about it, and they'll bring, you know, have the flies and everything. In other places, you always have to bring everything. So what's the general course in the Bahamas? Is it most people provide equipment and flies?
In general, as a traveling angler myself, I say take everything, always. Don't count on anyone, right?
Okay.
That would be my general rule, right? If you're packing for a trip, unless you know better, right, and that's either booking with, you know, a reputable outfitter or a reputable travel service that can give you the right information. There are a lot of lodges in the Bahamas that totally break that rule, and they have great equipment, not just mine. There's a lot of them, you know, but at the same time, you know, if you're going to pack up and fly somewhere, generally as an angler, I think it's the onus is on you to be prepared, and you should be in that habit. And there are going to be exceptions to that rule, and you should look for those exceptions.
And okay, good. Let's talk about bonefish themselves a little bit. Let me jump in equipment first, and then we'll talk about bonefish. Jack in Wyoming want to know weight, length of rod you prefer. What should we bring down there?
Yeah. Really, for bonefish, you know, 7, 8, or 9, depending on kind of location and conditions for the day. If you're going to buy one rod, just a standard 9 foot eight weight would be the rod of choice for bone fishing, really in most places in the world. Especially now with, you know, a good stiff saltwater eight weight, it's going to get everything done and still leave you plenty of room to land a good fish quickly, and still make it a lot of fun.
And what about line? What do you recommend?
Line, you know, your standard line is going to be a floating line. There's really kind of two schools of thought there, and really with most line manufacturers, they make two different bonefish lines. They kind of have their standard bonefish line, which is a longer taper, kind of gives you a little bit more delicate presentation, and then they have usually a shorter kind of shooting head taper, like I know Rio calls theirs the quick shooter. You know, that helps people load the rod faster and often will kind of help people cast a little bit better in the wind because it loads the rod a little bit deeper. And both of them are great. It really just depends on casting style and preference. But one thing I think that as people are preparing and practicing for these trips, particularly if they're a first-time saltwater angler, is I have a lot of people come and fish who are great anglers and great casters, and they show up for their first saltwater fish, and the thing that messes them up is the sense of urgency. And, you know, really the practice shouldn't be throwing an 80-foot cast or anything like that. It should be going from zero to whatever your distance is as quickly as possible with as few false casts as possible and being accurate. So having your fly in your hand, making three false casts and hitting a target at 60 feet is way more valuable than being able to make 20 false casts and throw at 80.
Hmm. Very good. Yeah, I've been there. Good. And what about functionality and reel? Anything you've got to have there?
You know, bonefish is a species that's going to put you on your reel. So, you know, unlike trout fishing where you can get by and your reel's mainly a line holder, you do need a quality reel. There's a lot of good ones out there, but, you know, I'm a believer in, you know, large arbor, lightweight, seal drag. I'm particularly a fan of Nautilus. I think that they've got kind of best in class for saltwater reels at the moment. And but there are a lot of good ones. But, you know, having a nice large arbor for fast line retrieve, you know, bonefish tend to get hooked and then run straight at you, and you need to be able to pick up line quickly. And, you know, something that's going to survive the salt water for more than, you know, more than one trip for you.
Yeah. Well, any other, you know, clothing, equipment, accessories that you find are a must?
Yeah, actually for me, my number one piece of equipment, for all of it, right, the one thing that I do not want to be without are quality sunglasses, right? This is, you know, bone fishing is a visual game, and I'm a big believer in quality lenses make all the difference. And so, I like the Costa Del Mar. I particularly like the 580 glass lens, green mirrored shades, and it makes a big difference in your ability to find and see fish. And I would rather have my glasses and use somebody else's rod and reel than the other situation. And I also create multiple. Yeah, no, they're green mirror.
Green mirror, so but what's the color of the lens?
That is the color of the lens.
Oh, it is. Okay. I thought I was just talking.
So that, I particularly like the glass over the polycarbonate. You know, there is an optical difference, and they do weigh a little bit more, but for me it's all about being able to see. And the other thing I do is I also carry a pair of low light yellow lenses for early morning, late evening, cloudy days. They're particularly useful in that, you know, waning light in the afternoon looking for tailing fish or just an overcast day, you know, but that works as covering two different conditions. It also gives you a backup in case you break loose or a buddy needs a pair as well. So for me, that is a critical piece of gear that I think a lot of people underestimate. I see a lot of glasses, and it's a visual game. So invest in your shades and save money somewhere else. Otherwise, a good pair of pliers. I like to think of myself as a minimalist. You know, less is more. So, you know, hat, sun protection. I don't like to wear shoes if I can avoid it. And, you know, really, the bonefish in the Bahamas are pretty cooperative. You only need a handful of flies and, you know, leader and tippet, and you're in good shape.
Good, good. What about care of your equipment, you know, at the end of the day? What's your routine for, you know, keeping your equipment salt-free and so forth?
I'll tell you what you should do and not what I do. So the right thing to do would be to spray it down and actually, you know, take a cloth and wipe it down and kind of get in all those little nooks of the ferrule and, you know, all those little crevices at the reel seat and things like that and just try to hit all that salt buildup. But if you spray them down with fresh water, give them a quick wipe and then a more thorough kind of rinse and clean at the end of your trip and it'll last you forever.
Right, so equipment out of the way. Let's talk about the bonefish themselves. Now, these flats, are these flats in the Bahamas associated with mangroves? Is that an important part of the bonefish, you know, where you find bonefish?
Well, you know, without a doubt, mangroves are critical, right? They're just critical for lots of reasons, you know, as far as habitat, but they are not. You will find bonefish on places that mangroves do not exist. And we have all kinds of different flats in the Bahamas. We have everything from hard white sand. We have everything from kind of mottled muddy bottoms to mixed corally bottom to seagrass beds to, you know, where you could actually find a whole wave of mangroves where fish are all back in between them and you just can't get to them as an angler, effectively at least. You know, we have all of that there. And mangroves are really the lifeblood of all of it. I mean, they provide habitat and shelter for young juvenile fish and lobster crawfish. They also kind of provide stability. You know, they protect the island from hurricanes. You know, they create a lot of the oxygen in the world. They're great filters. I mean, they're a critical part of the ecosystem to protect. And they are very important. And you can also read mangroves a little bit to figure out which flats are more likely to be productive than others. They do tell you information, but don't find a spot that you don't see mangroves and feel like that means you can't fish there.
What do the mangroves tell you? Give us an example.
Sure. You know, so one of the things mangroves can tell you is how much the water fluctuates. And that can be relevant for a few things. One is if it's somewhere that is generally dry for most of the low tide, right, where it comes all the way out of the water, there tends to be less food there, right? So if that's an area where it dries out but the mangroves can live, you know, if it dries out during the day, every day, then there tends to be less food and the fish will not push as hard onto that flat as they would if it's somewhere that stayed underwater or stayed wet for a longer period, for example.
Okay.
And you can tell that by the growth on the mangrove roots. Mm-hmm. So the mangroves themselves have barnacles and things that grow on them that require water. And so if they're constantly exposed to air, they won't have very many of them or none at all.
Good, good. Is there characteristics of the ideal flat? Is there an ideal flat?
You know, when I'm looking for new places, the things that I would consider ideal is you want a shallow flat because that gives bonefish the opportunity to be protected from predators, right? Because they have this ability to get in shallow water and feed, and that can keep them safe from a lot of the things that eat them. You do want shelter, so mangroves are great, somewhere where they can run and hide. Access to deep water, you know, another form of escape, which is particularly important for bigger fish. You want to look at the bottom itself and make sure that there are indicators that there is a healthy food source. I mean, ultimately, you're looking for these fish when they're feeding. So when they're pushing up onto a flat, you know, they are there looking for food. And so you as an angler should also be looking at the bottom and looking for the holes and the mounds that the worms and the shrimp and all the things that these fish are going to be digging up out of there are going to be eating. And you don't want to be fishing on a flat that just has this sterile, uniform bottom with nothing on it.
Okay, great. We have a question from Wilbur. He says in November he was flying to Miami from Grand Turk. He said he notices a lot of offshore flats without any associated mangrove or terrestrial system. And he was considering taking a shallow draft sailboat and exploring these offshore flats with SUPs. He said it looks like a guy could spend years exploring. Do you have any experience with that, with those kinds of sand flats?
Yeah, even within the Turks and Caicos, I've done that, and it's kind of surprising
one of the first places I did this was in the Turks and Caicos with a guy, and we just drove forever and kind of got to a spot that really in deep water you wouldn't even find it, or high tide rather, when the water was high, you know, it was pretty nondescript, and at low tide this sandbar would just barely come out of the water, and he wanted to go there kind of right as that was happening and then right as the tide started to push back in, and we just crushed the bonefish, and there was nothing there, but there was this one kind of just sand nub, and all these fish would come and pour on it, and the fishing was spectacular. But the one thing that also meant is there were tons of sharks. So because there was such deep water so close, it didn't take long till the sharks really put a big damper on our fishing.
Mm-hmm. Coming in after them, feeling the activity and stuff. Yeah. When you if you've got a school of bonefish and you spook them, how long does that last? Should you just move on, or can you wait for 10 minutes and try it again? What's your experience with that?
Yeah, there really are no absolutes in fishing anywhere. And the Bahamas in general, I would say the fish are generally very forgiving. And it really depends on the behavior of the fish. And I can give you lots of different examples. I mean, I've spooked a school of fish and then never saw them again, right? They picked up, they got out of town, and that was it. That was your one shot. And I've had other fish where I made a bad cast, and I hit him on the tail, and he spooked and then spun right around and ate the fly, right? And in general, I would say that if the fish are in casting range, you should continue to deliver a fly. And even though they're agitated and a little bit spooked, they are often aggressive enough where you could still pick one up. And that's particularly when there's a school of fish. Now, if you're targeting one good fish or something like that and you make a cast and spook him and he kind of goes off a little bit, I would wait and let him settle down again. That's probably not going to be 10 minutes, but, give him a couple minutes to kind of get back in his groove and take another opportunity to get him, because if you spook him that second time, you're probably not going to get a third time. But in general, one of the things that makes the Bahamas so spectacular for a traveling angler is the quality of the fishery and the quality of the habitat. And it is very forgiving, right? I mean, it's somewhere where you can go and you can spook the fish, and whether you take another shot of those guys or not, or just wait to the next one, it's not going to be your only shot for the day.
Yeah, with all those keys that you were talking about and the marls, that seems like you just move over a few feet and start again, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. What do bonefish feed on primarily in the Bahamas, or does it vary from island to island and key to key?
Yeah, bonefish, tarpon, truss, and particularly Aaron Adams over there at BTT. Aaron wrote a great book called Fisherman's Coast, which is really a scientific kind of analysis of what bonefish eat. And, for those really cerebral anglers or just the guys that really want to know, it's well worth the read. And one of the things that he talks about is not only what bonefish eat, but how it changes as they mature. And so when fish are young, juvenile bonefish, they're eating mainly mollusk and worms, and then moving up to crustaceans, shrimp and crabs. And then the really big bonefish, their main diet is actually going to be other fish. And not many people would throw a bait fish pattern for a bonefish, but that's when they are checking stomachs of really big ones. That's mainly what those guys are eating.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. And what about fly patterns that work best down there? You said you only need to bring a handful of flies down there. What would you recommend bring?
I would take that Pugliese spawning shrimp. If you gave me one saltwater fly, I mean, that is a fly that I would fish for bonefish, permit, and tarpon anywhere in the world with great degree of confidence. I mean, it's just such a great all-around saltwater pattern, and that EP spawning shrimp, and he makes it with BJ knives and lead eyes and various sizes, a couple different color patterns, but tan, white, and he's got a little olive, root beer color, but that's a killer pattern. Another one I really like is Viverka's mantis shrimp, which is a solid tan fly, very natural rubber legs, and I always keep a couple small crabs in my box. And there's a squimp is another one, just another really simple bonefish fly. Gotcha. I mean, you can't go to Andros without having a gotcha in your box. And a couple bonefish clousers or something else that I fish. And those are flies that I tend to fish with heavier eyes and deeper water, particularly when I'm looking for some bigger fish.
Okay, okay. Jake in Idaho asks, how far is the average cast when bone fishing, and how far does one need to be able to cast to have a successful bone fishing trip?
Jake, we get a lot of people where it's their first time fishing, right? So, I mean, if you show up having never cast a fly rod and give us a couple days, we'll get you proficient enough. And that means those guys are only going to be casting 20 to 30 feet. And in general, I would prefer someone that can cast 40 feet accurately and quickly than someone that wants to try to throw the whole fly line.
And is that, and accurately, right? Yeah. So, and
all of your shots are going to be, you know, downwind, right? I mean, guys don't want to pull the boat in the wind anyway, and they don't want to have you trying to throw a cast that they know you're not going to make. So we're always going to try to give you the best opportunity, right? We're going to try to put the sun at your back, the wind at your back. We're going to try to put all the variables in your favor. But the more practice you have and the more skill you have, it creates more opportunities that can be presented to you. And so as an angler, as you keep getting better and better, you're going to get more and more opportunities and you're going to catch more and more fish. But don't let any of that be scary. You can't cast into a 20-mile-an-hour wind, no problem. You know, we'll find a flat where we can go downwind and look for the fish that way. And there, again, these are fisheries throughout the Bahamas that are big enough, substantial enough, and healthy enough where that opportunity exists.
Yeah,
In general, when you think about casting, you know, most of your opportunities are going to be 20 to 50 feet, right? That's a realistic expectation. If you can reach out to 60, that's spectacular. You don't need to be making 80-foot casts in the Bahamas. But, you know, if you can effectively and accurately cast 20 to 50 feet, you're gonna be lights out throughout your trip.
Do you think fishing for carp in freshwater flats is a good way to practice for bonefish?
You know, I think absolutely, right? That sight casting element is really important. The only thing that really changes is the sense of urgency and the lead, right? My experience in carp fishing is that I'm putting it really close to them. You know, bonefish, you're going to want to lead them a little bit more. But in general, any time that you are sight casting and presenting a fly, that's going to help develop the skills you're going to use when you're bonefishing.
And how do the tides affect where you fish? It sounds like it's, you know, much different, for instance, if we're talking about Abaco, you know, from the west side to the east side.
Yeah, the tides are an incredible impact in some places, almost a non-impact in others. And it is also one of the most complicated things to understand, right? And I mean, I've been fishing my whole life and have saltwater fished, you know, for a long time, and tides are constantly getting better. And the Bahamian guides, it is really unbelievable how they can keep it in their head. So there's several things that impact tides, right? There's the obvious lunar tide, right? The tides can also be affected by wind. They can also be affected by barometric pressure. And all those things tied together means that the tide is not always predictable to mortals like me. And you go somewhere like South Andros, where South Andros, we fish the west side, the lodge is on the east side, and then we fish the south. And in the middle of the island, there's what are called creeks. Creeks are just cuts through the island. There's no fresh water. So we fish basically in the middle. So we're fishing east, west, middle, and south. And the tide on the west and the east side are almost completely opposite. And then in the middle, they pull on each other in different ways. And how those guides can keep it in their head what the tide is going to be blows me away. I've been going to South Andros since 2001, and I cannot figure it out. and those guys are so dialed, and we'll pick up and we'll move 40 minutes and we're at the right tide, and it's amazing. And they just consistently demonstrate, you know, the value of local knowledge and how important that is. And in other places, it's kind of easy to figure out, right? I mean, Abaco, the Marls, the tide is really completely wind-driven. So if the wind's blowing hard to the east, the water's going to go out all day long, right? And if it's blowing hard from the west, you're going to have water coming in all day long because the wind will just overpower the lunar tide there. On the ocean side of Abaco, you know, the tide is a lot more lunar-driven and can be impacted a little bit by the wind and some other things. But, you know, you can mainly look at a tide chart and get a pretty good idea of what's going to go on. But everywhere is really unique there, and there is no magic code to figure it out.
How do you approach a flat, and what are you looking for when you come onto a flat?
Yeah, so if I'm going somewhere I haven't been, you know, I'm really looking at habitat. I want to make sure that there is a reason for those fish to be there. So really what I'm looking for is food. That's what those fish are looking for. The other thing that I really want to think about is how I want to approach a flat. So I want to be able to cover it effectively, and I want to be able to see. So one thing I think a lot of people underestimate is where's the sun? And you always want to kind of keep your sun at your back. And oftentimes that means you get to a spot, and you just need to take the time to walk all the way to the other side and come back where you came from so that you can walk with the sun at your back so that you can see a little bit better. And I watch a lot of people make that mistake of getting to a spot, and then they're on the wrong side, and they either kind of have to burn through the whole thing, right, rather than take that extra step, either get out of the water ideally, you know, if you're on foot, and move around, or, you know, get back in the boat and go to the other side. I think that's a really important thing. And just trying to think about where those fish are going to be. There's some natural geographic features in flats that can help you predict where fish are going to be. There'll be little troughs where fish are going to funnel, right? They're going to try to stay near those so that they can use them as escape routes if they need to be. So, you know, if there's a little trough and then a flat up on that, you know, I'm going to get right on the edge of that. So those bigger fish in particular are going to hide in that little bit of deeper water, come up on the flat, feed, go back into the deeper water, and those are the fish that I'm going to be really targeting. And then it's also learning how to look for fish. And I find that's really challenging for a lot of people because very seldom are you actually looking for the fish itself. You know, you're looking for indications that the fish is there, pushes of water, ripples of water, flickering, shimmering tails, you know, the shadow of the fish, you know, where the sun is putting the shadow, but you don't actually see the fish itself, movement. And, you know, it's a lot harder to see when you're waiting than being from a boat. And often what you're looking for is a little bit different. And, you know, so just trying to put all the cards in your favor that you can, right? Taking the time to make everything in your advantage that you possibly can.
Do you find yourself or your clients fishing more often from a boat than wading in general throughout the Bahamas? Or is it just location by location?
I think it's a lot location, but I think in general, being guided, you will probably spend more time in the boat. And it's not because it makes the fishing better, but it lets the guide do more for you. So not much beats being on foot, seeing a tailing bonefish, and connecting to them while you're standing there in ankle-deep water. Right? That's a magical thing. And we do that throughout the Bahamas. But when you're waiting, you know, if you're waiting all day, so if you're on a guided trip and, you know, almost always you have two anglers per guide, so there's two anglers and a guide walking, and you're walking and covering a flat, you're going to be really limited in the amount of space that you get to cover, you know, versus being in a boat, right? So if that guide is pulling you, right, you're going to cover that flat that it took you 2 hours to wade, right? It's going to take you less than half that amount of time. So you're going to cover more water in a boat. The guide also can see better. He's going to see the fish further away, help get you in a better position. And he's also able to help you a little bit more with the casting. You're elevated. Your line is not in the water. You don't have surface tension to break. He can reposition the boat. And so a lot of the boat fishing is really for the angler's benefit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Much more productive that way than you're wasting a lot more time waiting. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but of course, I mean, wading is spectacular, and there are times that you want to be out of the boat, right? Where I mean, the fish do spook from the boat. One of the greatest advantages of wading is you get a lot closer, the casts are shorter, so when you know the fish are there and there's a lot of them, you can get out of the boat and kind of catch more. You know, casting the tailing fish on foot is spectacular. So it's never mutually exclusive. And there's a lot of value in doing both of them in the right times.
They were coming short on time here, but can you talk for a few minutes about the different presentation methods you use and how they might differ from other parts of the world for bonefish?
Yeah, you know, I'll say one thing that I've learned in the Bahamas, particularly in trying to chase some bigger fish, is a mistake a lot of people make, particularly good casters and good anglers, is over-delivering the fly. You know, so if a fish is cruising and you cast past him and then strip the fly in front of him and continue to strip, that works most of the time for most fish. But it does not work for the really, really big fish. Those fish know better. And so casting only in line with the fish or maybe even a little short and moving that fly away from the fish. So that bait, whether it's a crab or a shrimp or a bait fish, is never swimming towards something that's going to eat it. A shrimp is never going to just swim in front of the face of a bonefish. If he's in front of the bonefish and sees him, he's going to swim away. And that's, you know, ultimately when you're thinking about it, you are always just trying to imitate what these fish eat. And, you know, you kind of keep that in mind. And, you know, small things never swim towards big things that are going to eat them. Then you're going to be okay. And the general rule in the Bahamas, or at least for me, you know, I won't say the general at all. I find in the Bahamas, I like a long, slow strip. And when I say long, slow, I tell people, you know, to put it in their pocket. So you have your rod and reel on the front, you know, a 2-3 foot strip, long and slow, put it all the way in your pocket, come all the way back. You know, a lot of parts of the world, they like that little 2-inch fast little strip. And in general, I've had better success, you know, long and slow.
Okay. Okay. And does that, I think you mentioned earlier, that does vary depending on where you are, for instance, east side versus west side of Abaco, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly matters with fish, too, right? I mean, really, you know, one of the great things about bonefishing is it's a visual game. You see the fish, you get to watch him react, you should be reading that fish's behavior and adjusting in real time, right? And that is, as you're elevating as an angler, you know, all the little things, you know, where you're stripping, where your fingers are, your line management, all that becomes habitual, right? And then it lets you really think about the things that matter more, which is how's that fish behaving? How's he reacting to my fly? Should I stop it? Should I slow down? Should I speed up? You know, what can I do to trigger that instinct to get that fish to grab a hold? And so there never is one thing that's always going to work. So you have to be willing to adapt your ability to do that on your own, particularly when you can see what's happening and make decisions, the better you're going to perform as an angler.
Mm-hmm. One last question. Can you give us a day in the life of a fly fisher in the Bahamas? Let's say they came to your lodge, and what would their day be like?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so if you're staying with us, it's pretty easy. We have coffee ready at 6:30. 7 o'clock, we start taking breakfast orders to order, so we'll make you eggs any way you want. A little bit of getting your gear ready. Guides are out cleaning their boats, gassing up, you know, getting lunches in your boat for you. 8 o'clock, you're going to leave the dock. You're going to fish all day. You have lunch and beer in the boat for you, and you're going to make it back to the dock sometime between 4 and 5. And hopefully you can come back with a big smile on your face and how many fish you caught, and how many fish you lost, and, you know, hopefully the guides made you laugh and taught you a little bit and you had a good time. And then you're going to come back, take a quick shower, cocktails at the bar, appetizer. You know, we have a great Bahamian chef, probably do a local dish of crack conch or something like that. And then we're going to finish up by the fire. And we have a fire every evening, sit out by the fire, have a beer, and tell a few more stories and do it again tomorrow.
Sounds great. Sounds great, Oliver. Well, good. Well, unfortunately, we got to wrap this up and call it a night. But stick with me, Oliver. We're going to do a little giveaway. I'll have you help me out with it. So, and we'll be also giving away 1-year membership to the International Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. as well as that $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So hang with me just a few more minutes, folks, and we'll award these prizes and call it a night. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature and support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn how you can help support their retreats, visit fishon.org, fishon.org, or you can call them at 616-855-4017, 616-855-4017. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We really appreciate it. So now it's time to award the prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show so you don't miss out on a chance on winning some of these great prizes that we give away. If you are a lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with the information on how to receive your prize. So first up, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. To learn more about Fly Fishers International, go to flyfishersinternational.org. So check them out. Great organization to be a part of. And so if you don't win tonight, go join. And let's see here. Fire up the database here and pick our first winner. And it looks like it's Charles Shadan or Shadan in Massachusetts. So, Charles, congratulations on winning that one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International. I know you'll enjoy it, and be part of that is a good thing for you to do. Next up, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, one-year subscription from Amato Books, amatobooks.com. Check out. They have all kinds of periodicals, books, and so forth that all pertain to fly fishing. Check them out and see what they have at AmatoBooks.com. And our winner there is Mark Smeltzer. Mark Smeltzer in Oregon. So congratulations, Mark, getting that one-year subscription. So I know you'll enjoy that. Okay, so we're going to give away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder. Check them out at frontrangeanglers.com, frontrangeanglers.com. And let me clear my queue here. Looks like I'm good to go there. And so the question, we'll make it easy tonight. Name two flies that Oliver recommended for the Bahamas. Name two flies that he recommended. And we'll see if anybody was paying attention here, Oliver. So let's see. So they're all rapidly typing in now, and I'm just refreshing the queue here, trying to see who answers first correctly. So we'll see what we have here in just a minute. Okay. All right. Let's go, people. That's the one that they, you know, they least expect because it's usually the easier question to answer. Well, unless my system is just not working properly here. And I think I got a winner here. Phil in Kentucky. He says, gotcha and a clouser. I think those are two of them, aren't they, Oliver?
That'll do it. Absolutely.
That'll do it. And I think, Phil, you've won this before, so I'm going to email you and give you an offer of maybe a few books that you might like to have. So I'll send you an email with that with those options, and then because I don't think I can get you the $25 gift certificate again. But correct me if I'm wrong when we connect. So Phil's a longtime listener, and we'll take care of you, Phil. So congratulations on that. Well, Oliver, it was really appreciate you being with us and sharing your knowledge tonight and taking your time out from your business and your new baby. So everybody, congratulations to Oliver on his new baby. And you didn't tell me, boy or girl?
Little boy.
Little boy. Well, good, good. Well, I know you'll have a wonderful time being a parent. So congrats and thanks for being with us.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Roger. Had a great time.
Yeah, great, good. Hopefully everybody's found our archive on our show, and on our website, and if you haven't, there's links on our homepage, in the middle of the page, at the bottom of every page. Go check it out. There's only 260 shows we have in the archive now. So whatever your topic, whether it be trout, tarpon, bonefish, particular place, go check it out and see if we have some shows on it. I'm sure you'll be pleasantly surprised. Our next broadcast will be on January 3rd, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'll interview Will Blair, and our topic for the show will be Kamchatka's Wild Rainbows. Will started working as a guide in Kamchatka in 1997 and was immediately captivated by the area. Kamchatka is still one of the most remote and wild rainbow fisheries in the world, and fishing it is an experience not found anywhere else. Join us to learn about fishing Kamchatka from one of the most respected experts in the industry. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Amato Books, Whitbread Key Fishing Lodge, Watermaster, Baja Fly Fishing Company for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone.